Synthaholics.
Welcome to Synthaholics, our first episode of Dune. We are talking about the Dune book series here, the first book. Today we have with us myself, Aaron O'Brien. We have David Duncan and Holly Michelle. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So Dune, as Holly put a little video out recently, just saying how we are excited for the new movie and we are excited for this franchise maybe to take off on the film world. And
maybe they'll do it right this time.
Maybe they will. We had a great discussion about the Dune, David Lynch Dune movie, some many episodes ago. You can look for that. But the Lynch movie, as much as I love it, has lots of problems, and it doesn't hit. It hits on the certain beats, but it doesn't. It misses out on a lot of stuff, and it has huge problems. So we're hoping that the new movie comes out. It's going to be much better. So, but we're going to be talking primarily about the novel here, and we feel that if we talk about the novel, then perhaps we'll have a better understanding when we actually watch the movie.
Yeah, we can know what to look forward to in the movie, because I only know the David Lynch movie and the awfully costumed sci-fi miniseries.
Right, exactly. So the book, the novel Dune, came out in August 1st, 1965, and it was the author was from Frank Herbert. And apparently, he was a writer. He had done a lot of things during his years before he became a famous writer. And he was trying to write stories and get them published in magazines. And he started, I guess he was up in Oregon, and he was checking out these sand dunes and the Oregon dunes. And he was writing a story about it. And he was very interested in ecology and how the planet works. And he got sort of the spark of the idea of the planet Dune. And this is where it all took off from there. And he started publishing his stories through analog magazines for quite some time until it got collected into a book. So, and obviously Dune has been, I don't know, probably one of the more famous sci-fi books out there. I mean, you say Dune to any geek, any sci-fi lover, they're going to know exactly what you're talking about. So, but we're going to talk about the first two. They're not really chapters, but we're going to the opening sections. And the first part takes place. The first book is called Dune. And it's book one, and it starts off where they're on planet Caladan. Caladan is the house for House Atreides, and we should probably back up a little bit. The universe is ruled by an emperor, or the known universe ruled by an emperor, and they're all divided up into house of fiefdoms like we would know back in the medieval ages. So there's different houses of royalty.
Oh, I didn't vote for him.
I didn't vote for him. So we start off on planet Caladan. Caladan's more of a, I guess it's more of an Earth-like planet. Like oceans and
lots greenery. Lots of greenery and water.
Yeah.
Cocaine, and this is, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, cocaine. So Duke Leto Atreides is the ruler of Caladan. He's a head of House Atreides. And his son, Paul, is his son.
He had a sex change very, very young. Used to be his daughter.
Yeah, so his son and he is his mother is Jessica, who is used to be a Bene Gesserit. I guess he still is a Bene Gesserit, but she became the Duke's concubine. Not really sure why she's a concubine and not the actual queen.
Right.
I don't think that's ever explained in the book as
we
far
don't
as
do
I
do that here.
But or I guess would not be queen, the duchess, but whatever. So we get to the point where in the book starts off that the reverend mother of the Bene Gesserits comes to planet Caladan, and she wants to see this Paul Atreides because Paul may be the Kwisatz Haderach, which is sort of like the superhuman being. And the history of that is that the Bene Gesserits have been planning people's genetic lines for like generations to breed the superhuman being. And Jessica was ordered only to bear female children and not male. So apparently in the Dune future world that they can decide who's going to be bred. What type of boy or girl is going to be bred, that kind of thing. So, but Jessica decided that she's going to make Duke Leto happy and give him a son, because I guess that's what the Duke wanted. And so because of that, he may be the Kwisatz Haderach. I don't know why the Kwisatz Haderach has to be a man per se, but...
It's just because the female can't look back into the past lineage of females, like the feminine ones, they need someone masculine to look into the masculine ones.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that in there.
Yeah. There's something about how they can kind of like see into themselves and see down through the ages, like see into their pasts.
Yeah, like past lives and past mm-hmm. generations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like dial it up, like dial up different people from the past.
Right, and the
hello, women, grandma. And
the, yeah, right. and the women can't, so they need a man that can.
Nice.
Most men fail.
Yes, most men fail. Most men die.
Most men enjoy the gum jabar.
Gum jabar. So that's what the Reverend Mother. She comes to test Paul for. A test that he has to put his hand in a box, and she puts a gum jabar to his neck. And a gum jabar is sort of like a poison needle.
It kills only aminals.
That's right. And it's a test to see if Paul is a human. So so he goes through this test, and during this he gets the famous Bene Gesserit's benediction. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I love that. Mm-hmm. I ever since the movie, I've said that to myself a zillion times, just in personal, just like in my head. So mm-hmm. It's a great line.
We need Morgan Freeman to narrate your life.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh no. He's doing it again. So the Reverend Mother tests him, and Paul passes the test, which is, I guess, a surprise, because Jessica knows that Paul's going through this, and she's sort of just like terrified, but knows it has to be done because her son might be killed by the Reverend Mother.
I hear he's got a very low pain tolerance.
Right, exactly. So,
honestly, I didn't think it was, they didn't really explain that he could die until it was like after. It was like, well, you could have died. And it's just like, how though?
The gum jabar.
The gum jabar.
I'm pretty sure they explained it as it was happening. If you pull your head in the box, you die.
He said there's poison. He said something about you should know about poisons being a duke or duke's son or something like that. But
yeah, but I don't know. It didn't seem tied together because I guess I was more like, I mean, this isn't the first time I've read this chapter, but I was more just like curious as you know, he's written as curious. He's not really written as, like, scared and fearful. So, right. like, he continued to ask questions while this was happening. So, like, I don't know. It didn't seem like that big of a danger, to be completely honest.
Well, you could see the apprehension in his mother, though, the whole time. She's sort of scared.
Was flipping out the entire time.
Yeah, like, she's very upset. Paul can see her fear in her eyes and stuff like that. So, And then later on, after he passes the test, the Jessica and the Reverend Mother are talk to Paul about what will happen to Paul to the House Atreides, and that his father is going to die. So there are certain things the Bene Gesserit seem to know, that no matter they feel like this is going to happen no matter what. They foresee these things and they understand what's going to happen. So
it just happened and will happen again and again.
Right.
And again.
So the one thing I probably omitted through this whole thing was that the Atreides were given by the Emperor the planet Arrakis, which is also called Dune, and it's the for them to rule and to harvest the spice melange off the planet. So this is the melange is the spice is the most important thing in all the universe. It helps space travel through the navigation, the Navigators Guild, and all sorts of other things that gives people long lives. So it does a lot of things for the whole universe just through the spice. So they are given the rights to go there, and they're going to mine the Arrakis, and they're moving from Kaladin to Arrakis.
And we can do it in less than 12 parsecs.
That's right. So from there we get to another planet. We get to Giedi Prime, which is the Baron Harkonnen's planet, or the Harkonnens. They're another house, and this is where we meet the fat Baron, and he's sitting there with his nephew Fade and Peeta. Peeta is a Mentat, and we'll meet another Mentat later on for the House Atreides, but Peeta works just for the Harkonnens. And the Baron starts talking about what the idea was behind the Atreides getting Arrakis. So apparently the Harkonnens used to rule Arrakis. The Emperor took that right away and has given it now to the Atreides. And obviously the Baron Harkonnen says this is a trap for the Atreides, so they can basically double-cross them and kill them with the Emperor kind of helping them along quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of back and forth on how it seems like the Baron Harkonnen's trying to get Fade to kind of like give him like the story behind everything, and trying to teach him how to be like to rule, and he's kind of giving him this information. So this is kind of like the villains giving away the underlying plot, how the villains are trying to manipulate the story. So
hey, try on this blue thong.
So the Baron, the Harkonnens are the enemies of the sworn enemies of the Atreides. So, and apparently there was a letter that went back and forth between the Baron Harkonnen and Paul Atreides, or not Paul, Leto Atreides, the Duke. And they basically were trying to basically say that they're still enemies. So there can be no peace between them. And the idea is if the Baron can get the Atreides out of the way, then they can rule Arrakis for themselves again. And that's what the Emperor wants the Atreides out of the way, because he's afraid that the Duke is becoming too popular with all the houses, the other noble houses within the known universe. And so that's the basically breakdown of these two chapters within the first book. Any thoughts from you guys?
Well, I've heard you talk about Dune before, and saying like how the movie is can't like there's just so much backstory. And the thing is, you gave a lot more backstory in your recap than it's actually given in the book. The books just kind of just go dialogue for dialogue. It's an interesting writing style where there's not a ton of description. It's almost written like a play with as minimal description as possible. I'll be interested to see how it looks going forward and how they fill in all this extra information. And I was looking up stuff about the old Dune, and they were giving out pamphlets to catch you up on the story because the movie does do an information dump on you, but there's still more information. I remember they said they handed out pamphlets for everyone going to see the movie so they could kind of know what's going on.
Right.
So I was expecting a lot of like just backstory stuff and like a prologue. And there really wasn't really anything. It was just kind of got started, kind of how the movie did.
Right. Exactly. I mean, the movie starts off with the, Princess Ursula, who's the emperor's daughter. And she kind of like gives like kind of the story behind everything before the movie actually starts. But we don't even get that. Look at my forehead. We don't get that. We just get kind of like a beginning intro from a quote from like the book starts with these quotes from like books of history. Yeah. Books of history through her about Paul Atreides and what he did in the future. So kind of looking back.
Yeah, they're kind of weird. Like these are like little spoilers because I, you know, if you've seen Dune, you kind of know what the stuff is. I'm like, oh, these are like little spoilers if you know what's going on.
Right.
I guess if you don't, it doesn't make any sense. But it's like, huh, that's interesting.
And I only backed up a couple things just because I thought it was just pertinent for anyone listening who might not know Dune as well. But all these things get revealed more and more as time goes on. And all the stuff that we don't know or that isn't spelled out in these first two beginning chapters gets spelled out more and more as time progresses. So I don't know. The writing style, I think you're right. There's not a ton of description on a lot of things. I mean, they give like minimal descriptions about people's reactions, how they react to certain comments or thoughts. There's a lot of internal dialogue going on, especially with Paul. He gets a lot of internal dialogue. Obviously, he's the main character. We even get some of Fade.
I think that goes on actually with a lot of the characters throughout the rest of the book.
Yeah, but it seems like we get it. But we, yeah, like I'm saying, we just get some with Fade in this the second chapter here. You know, he's kind of like, you know, because he's bored of the Baron's like bluster and just talk and him and Peeta talking and going back and forth because Peeta and the Baron don't really like each other, it seems like. And they like he talks about killing Peeta more than once during just that one chapter. So he's like, someday I'll kill you, you know, kind of thing. So anyways, this is what our plan is, that we're just going to talk about these a couple chapters a week. And just maybe we'll put these a collection of books later on. But this is just something for everybody to kind of get primed and interested into the movie, or maybe even
exciting World of Dune,
or even pick up the book yourself and start reading if you like. So, they're all going to be short episodes for sure.
Yeah. Took me, like about 58 minutes to read just these two chapters.
Yeah. They're not super
so long. Our episode is going to be like 15.
Yeah. And the problem is with these couple chapters is that you get a big information dump right away. Mm-hmm. And you're like given a lot of names, a lot of places, and you're supposed to process it. Like, yes, we've all been kind of like exposed to the movie Dune and the idea of what Dune is about. So we kind of have an idea. But I always wonder like what this was like when people first reading this book and there was no movie or anything to reference.
Yeah, but let's see. When did this book come out again?
65.
I mean, it's not really abnormal to in this from the 60s to find a book that has out of this world language or writing styles that were like, huh? You kind of had to read it a couple of times.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that's
a good point. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you.
Yeah, I know, right? But the writing style isn't so dense. I've read some books like George R. R. Martin, you know, his writing style is quite dense at points.
Oh, it's so dense. It's too descriptive.
Yeah, you really get into a lot of stuff, and you're just like, oh my god, can we just like move on to this point? Yeah. You know,
I listened to all the Game of Thrones books and audiobook, and like it was interesting hearing all the descriptions of everything. But if I had to read that book myself, I don't think I would have finished any of them.
Yeah,
because they were like so
school and history class.
Oh, it was painful. It felt like Timothy Zahn, his Heir to the Empire trilogy. Like, I couldn't read that. It was so dense with descriptions. I was like, just get to the point. I didn't like that. I feel like Robert Jordan hits a nice middle ground where he's descriptive enough to know what's going on. He'll remind you of stuff because the series is so long, but I don't know. I didn't feel like it was overkill with description.
Right.
And then Frank Herbert is a complete minimalist.
It is a little minimalist, I guess. He doesn't get into full details on everything, and he leaves a lot of stuff. He just tells you what it is, but he doesn't get into a full description of what it is.
I don't know. I really enjoy his writing style.
It's not hard to read, that's for sure.
I didn't say it was bad. I just said it was just, it's minimalist. It's interesting. It's almost, like I said earlier, like almost like reading a play with the small notes in it.
Description. Yeah. I mean, there's certain descriptions.
To me, it just feels like he's, instead of talking at you, for lack of a better phrase, he really puts you in the minds of the characters that the story is about, rather than just telling you the story.
That's a good point. Yeah, he's not narrating it.
Yeah, right. Robert Jordan does that a lot, too, in the Wheel of Time series. There's so much internal monologue. It is like, it's literally probably half the books is internal monologue.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
Well, I can't wait to get into more of this, and next week we'll talk about this again, and we'll get to the next two chapters. So if you have the book Dune, you know, why don't you pick it up and read a couple chapters and join us with this, and we're going to go through everything, and hopefully, I haven't done the math, that we can get this done before the movie comes out. So.
Well, probably not.
It's only going to take a little while to record an episode, so I mean,
yeah,
we could probably pump them out if we have the time. Need to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you definitely, if there's something you want to contact us about, you can talk to us at Synthaholics.com as our website. You can also contact us at our email at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Facebook group is Facebook.com/groups Synthaholics. Hit us up there if you want to talk about Dune. Also, you can get into our Twitter. Twitter is Synthaholic Duo. And our Instagram is Synthaholic.podcast. Hit us up there. And as always, if you want to support the show, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics. Any donation is greatly appreciated. Guys, next week we'll do the next couple chapters and we can talk more about Dune. Let us know what you think. Before the
night's over, yeah.
May the spice flow.
I don't want to say live long and prosper because it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. Right. May the spice flow.
Yeah, I know. Do the I guess I have to look up and see if the Fremen have any kind of like parting words.
We shall call you Oozle, which is the base of the balls of the penis.
Alright, guys. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I've